Cowboy leads a different kind of life when there were cowboys. They're a dying breed. Still means something to me, though. A couple of days, we'll move this herd across the river, driving through the valley. Oh, there's nothing like bringing in a herd.
See, now that's great. Your life makes sense to you. What's so funny?
You city folk, you worry about a lot.
Well, I'm just saying.
How old are you? 38.
39.
Yeah. You all come up here about the same age, same problems. Spend about 50 weeks a year getting knots in your rope, and then you think 2 weeks up here will end time for you. None of you get it. Do you know what the secret of life is?
No, what?
This.
Your finger?
One thing. Just one thing. You stick to that and everything else don't mean.
That's great, but what's the one thing?
That's what you gotta figure out.
The one thing. I mean, it sounds so easy, and yet it's so hard to figure out. It's weird because it's like we all know there's one thing out there. I mean, that's what Billy Crystal, his character, is having a midlife crisis in that movie, City Slickers. And you know, it's a midlife crisis. Now we have quarter life crisis. You know, we have all these crises where we're trying to figure out the one thing. We're all searching for it. We know it's there, but nobody can quite find it. Or at least most people seem to think they can't find it. What is that one thing that makes sense out of life? What one thing that makes your life worth living? You've got to figure it out. I mean, people answer that question in all kinds of different ways. Here's one way that you can answer the question.
Why do we work so hard? For what? For this? For stuff? Other countries, they work, they stroll home, they stop by the cafe, they take August off. Off. Why aren't you like that? Why aren't we like that? Because we're crazy, driven, hardworking believers, that's why. Those other countries think we're nuts. Whatever. Were the Wright brothers insane? Bill Gates, Les Paul, Ali. Were we nuts when we pointed to the moon? That's right. We went up there, you know what we got? Bored. So we left. Got a car up there, left the keys in it. Do you know why? Because we're the only ones going back up there, that's why. But I digress. It's pretty simple. You work hard, you create your own luck, and you gotta believe anything is possible. As for all the stuff, that's the upside of only taking 2 weeks off in August. N'est-ce pas?
Why do I find that so motivating? I'm like, yeah! I don't know whether to look for a flag to salute or go to work or I don't know what to do, but there's something inside of you that goes, yeah! And that's a way to answer the one thing question. Ambition or accumulate, however you want to think about it. But of course there are other answers to that question, what's the one thing? So in 1983, Steve Jobs goes to John Sculley. Sculley is the CEO of Pepsi, which is a much bigger company at the time than Apple. This is years and years ago. Nobody knew what Apple was going to become. Jobs goes and recruits Sculley to come to Apple. Now, it turns out Sculley's an absolute disaster at Apple, but that's not the point here. The point is, what does Jobs say to him to get Sculley to leave this big-time CEO position and come work at Apple? He looks at him, Jobs looks at Sculley and says, do you want to spend the rest of your life selling sugared water, or do you want to have a chance to come change the world? See, that appeal to a cause, that appeal to live for something big, that's another way, accumulate ambition or living for a cause, another way people answer the question of what's the one thing? This morning, we're going to look at Mary of Bethany, and she is going to challenge our perspective on what that one thing is. There are so many Marys in the New Testament. It's like 6, 7 Marys. And when you think of Mary in the New Testament, first thing that pops in your mind is Mary, mother of Jesus. That is not this Mary. She is known as Mary of Bethany because that's where she's from. She has a sister named Martha and a very well-known brother named Lazarus. Now she's only mentioned 3 times in the New Testament, 3 times. And so we're just going to look at all 3 of those occasions, short little stories. I'm going to dive in, read fast, pay attention. Here we go. Luke 10. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet, listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. So she came to him and said, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one." Well, there's that one thing again. "Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." Okay, the next time we see Mary, her brother Lazarus has died, and Jesus has showed up on the scene too late to do anything about it. John chapter 11, we're just going to read one verse this time, verse 32. "When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, 'Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died.'" Third and final time is further down the road towards Jesus' death. It's just 6 days before he will be crucified. In fact, that's where it picks up, John 12. 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany. That's a village about 2 miles outside of Jerusalem, where Lazarus lived, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. Here a dinner was given in Jesus' honor. Martha served. So you see they're going back to the same roles they had in Luke 10. Martha's serving, while Lazarus was among those reclining at the table with him. Then Mary took about a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume. She poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, who was later to betray him, objected. "Why wasn't this perfume sold with the money given to the poor? It was worth a year's wages." He did not say this because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. As keeper of the money, he used to help himself to whatever was put into it. "Leave her alone," Jesus replied. "It was intended that she should save this perfume for the day of my burial. You'll always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me." 3 times that Mary is mentioned, Mary of Bethany is mentioned in the New Testament, and 3 times she's in the same posture, the same position. She is at the feet of Jesus. The first time in Luke 10, she's at the feet of Jesus, learning from him, absorbing all of his wisdom and knowledge. The second time, she's at the feet of Jesus confessing her faith in him when her brothers died and she's facing this incredibly difficult trial. The third time, she is worshiping at the feet of Jesus, surrendering to Jesus all that she is and all that she has. But this posture of being at the feet of Jesus, this habit she has, It sheds light on this question we're asking this morning. What is the one thing that makes sense out of our life? What's the one thing that's worth living for? Because if you can just for a moment, I know it's almost impossible, for a moment, shut out of your mind and heart all the voices, all the parents' expectations, all the kids' expectations, all the neighbors' expectations about your life, where you're going to live and what vacation you're going to go on and what teams you're going to sign your kid up for, or what lessons or what school district. If you can just shut out all the people telling you what you should do in your career and that this will make you happy and this is the right set of advice about your relationships. If you can just for a moment shut out the cultural pressure to have a certain set of values and pursue a certain set of goals in your life. If you can just shut out for a moment all the false promises that bombard us, then I think what you'd see is that what Mary saw, that Jesus is the one thing, that Jesus is the one thing worth living for. That everything else that you are hearing in your head, every other voice out there that's selling you a false promise, they're all selling you something that will ultimately let you down and ultimately disappoint you. But Jesus, he never leaves you, he never abandons you, but most importantly, he never fails you. And so that's why when Mary saw that about Jesus, that's why she spent her time with him at his feet. It's why she broke the bottle at his feet. In that bottle, we are told, was nard, but not just that, we're told it's pure nard. Now, nard was an extract, an oil extract from a plant that was grown in India, and it was incredibly valuable. And we're told she doesn't just have nard, but pure nard, and we're told it's an expensive perfume. The custom was that if a special guest came in your house, you might take a little dab and put it on them as a sign of respect and a sign of honor. But this was too valuable. This nard in this bottle is too valuable to do anything more than that. You see, we're told that it cost a year's wages. I don't know what you make in a year's wages. Maybe it's $25,000, $50,000, $100,000. I don't know. But that's the way to think about it, is that this year you're going to get paid a certain amount of money. That's how much that pure nard was worth to Mary and her family. That's a lot of money. And she comes out and she breaks it on his feet. But this is her life. This is her security. This is her everything. We're not sure. Maybe it was a family heirloom. Maybe she came from a wealthier family. We're not really sure. But what we know is that this was the most valuable thing she had, and she broke it on him. She broke her whole life open and gave it to Jesus. Now, can you go back for a second and think, if somebody had known what she was about to do, if they had seen her slip out and get this bottle of expensive perfume and bring it in and they knew what she was going to do, they would have stopped her and said, don't be so silly. Don't overreact. Don't go overboard here. I mean, sure, Jesus is special. Maybe he gets two dabs of that or something, but you got to think ahead. You got to be practical. You got to think about the rest of your life. People will always try to talk you out of going all in on Jesus. People will always try to tell you that it doesn't quite make sense to sell out on Jesus. Be practical, they'll tell you. If I said, hey, I have something to sell you, it's like 10 bucks, and I say, here, you give me the money and I'll give it to you, and you're like, oh, okay, what am I getting? You know, maybe you'd do that for 10 bucks, but if it was $100 or $1,000, you'd go, well, is that worth it? Do I want that? But imagine that I say, it's your home. I have something to sell you. All you got to do is give me your home. All you got to give me is all your retirement. All you got to give me for it is your whole family. You go, well, hang on, stop. Is it worth it? Does that make sense? That'd be the right question to ask, right? Well, that's what I'm asking you to do today. I'm asking you to follow in the steps of Mary of Bethany and to go all in, to break the bottle of your life at the feet of Jesus, to trade in everything you have to get him. And I think it's appropriate to say, is he worth it? That's not a bad question. So let's look. Let's examine. Let's consider Jesus. You know, everybody looks up to somebody, and that's good. There's nothing wrong with that. And it's good and healthy to have somebody you respect or look up to or even admire. But everything you admire in another person is found perfectly in Jesus. Everything you respect or look up to in another person is found perfectly in him. So do you admire a rich person? Well, Jesus' riches are unsearchable and incomparable. Jesus owns everything in the world. It's all his. But Jesus isn't just rich in things. He is rich in grace and mercy, because he extends them to us and he never runs out of either. Jesus is the fountain of inexhaustible and unending fountain of love. Do you admire a wise person? In Jesus are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. When he was 12 years old, he went to the temple and confounded and amazed all the religious teachers. Later, his opponents set traps for him, trying to trip him up, but they were always unable to. He was always able to turn the tables on them. Jesus answered questions no one else could. He asked questions that no one could answer. Jesus is the one in whom all wisdom is found. We're told that King Solomon was so wise that people from all over the world came to sit at his feet and listen to him. But now in Jesus, one far wiser than King Solomon is here. Do you admire a strong person? No one possesses power like Jesus. He spoke the entire world into creation. All things were made by Jesus and for Jesus. He rules over nature, calming storms and walking on the water. Jesus powerfully reigns over all the supernatural forces in this world so that every angel and every demon is subject to his command. Jesus has the name that is above all names, so that at the name of Jesus, every knee under the earth, in the earth, above the earth, every knee will bow to Jesus. Every tongue will confess that Jesus is Lord. Do you admire a good person? Well, Jesus was without sin. He was never selfish, never self-centered, never greedy, never gossiped. He always obeyed the great commandment to love the Lord his God with all of his heart, mind, soul, and strength, and to love his neighbor as himself. Jesus sought out the hurting. He sought out the marginalized and the outcast. He extended grace and kindness to the condemned. Jesus loves to give good gifts to his children. Everything that we want in life, everything we look for, everything we're searching for, everything we long for and look in this world for, we look everywhere for it except Jesus. But it's all found in Jesus. Every greatness, every wealth, every wisdom, every power, every beauty, every goodness, every love, every longing can be satisfied in him. Even the best of all these other earthly virtues that we have, we contain them a little bit, but in Jesus, they are perfect. You go out at night, especially maybe if you're on vacation, you're out in the country, or you're out somewhere where the air is particularly clear, and you see all the stars, and you just sit there and stargaze, and you're amazed at how bright and beautiful they are, and all the shapes and the configurations, and you take your kids or your friends, whoever you're with, and you're like, wow, this is amazing. I wish I could see this every night. Now, what happens to those stars during the daytime? Like, do they just kind of like turn, like the world turns and the stars go away, and then they come back up at night? Well, no. No, those stars are there all the time. Those stars are there right now. But if you go out here, you won't see a one of them. Why? Well, because the sun's up, right? And when the sun is up, its light is so bright that the things that you were amazed at last night, you can no longer even see. The stars that you were oogling at last night cannot be seen in the presence of the sun because the sun's light is so much brighter. So now all those earthly joys that we have that are good and given to us by God, but they're still earthly joys. The most joyous marriage, the most meaningful job, the most meaningful cause that you could give your life to, the most blessed parenthood, the most beautiful baby, the best vacation you've ever been on. They are like those stars. They are good and they are there, but in the presence of the sun, you cannot see them. For he is so much more glorious, so much brighter, so much more beautiful, that the things that you get excited about fade in his presence. Is he worth it? Is it worth breaking the bottle of your life on him? I mean, we could go on and on about Jesus. And this is the time where we say, well, you know, we could go on and on, but we don't have time. We got to get to something else, but not today. Let's keep going because I'm asking you to sell out. I'm asking you to go all in. I'm asking you to break the bottle of your life on him. Is he worth it? Oh, you should love Jesus, for he hangs out with sinners like us. He loves sinners like us. He ate with prostitutes and crooked businessmen, and not with the moral and religious leaders. Jesus is never put off by the messiness of our life. In all of our stumbling and failing, Jesus has never said and never will say to us, enough, I'm done with you. Where sin abounds, grace hyperabounds. Jesus' glory and majesty will one day soon make every DC and Marvel superhero look small and silly. There was nothing physically attractive about Jesus. He would have never have appeared on Men's Health magazine. He was a normal Savior who came for normal people, not only beautiful people. He came for all people. And Jesus never misunderstands us. He always gets us. Jesus never interrupts us. He never misjudges our motives. And Jesus chose the path of humility, the path of suffering. Sometimes we are dealt cards in life that we have to play, and they are cards of humility or suffering or hardship or difficulty or trial, and we have no choice in the matter. But Jesus, He chose the path of humility. So he knows what it's like to be hungry and hated. He knows what it's like to be thirsty, rejected, taunted, shamed, abandoned, suffocated, tortured, crucified. See, he chose the path of humility. He knows what it's like to be accused unjustly of something. He knows what it's like to be attacked. He knows what that's like because he experienced it. So he knows what you're going through. See, Jesus understands your struggle and my struggle. He understands our struggle with sin. He understands our temptation to gossip and to build our reputation as a person in the know. He knows our temptation to think too highly of ourselves or to put ourselves at the center of our world, always asking, is this convenient for me? Is this comfortable for me? He knows the temptation to lust and to approval, to live for the approval of other people. Jesus has gone up against every sin imaginable, except he defeated it. He defeated every sin every time. The Bible says that he knows what we are going through. He aids us in our temptation because like us, he was tempted in the way we are, except without sin. So he comes to our aid in our struggle. Is he worth it? Psalm 84:10 says, better is one day in your courts than 1,000 elsewhere. I'd rather have one day with God than 1,000 anywhere else. I'd rather be a doorkeeper in the house of God than dwell in the tents of the wicked. Psalm 73 says about Jesus, whom have I in heaven but you? And earth has nothing I desire besides you. Story of a missionary who came back from a long career overseas in a hard, difficult country. Older gentleman, his wife had passed away while he was there. He's coming back, visiting his daughter, taking a bus. He didn't have money for a flight. He took a bus to the West Coast to see her. He stops in Vegas. That's where the bus stopped. He gets out. What's a missionary older man gonna do in Vegas, right? You know, it's kind of awkward, but he just walks around, walks through the casinos, walks down the strip, sees the lights, sees the fame, sees the glamour, sees the glitz, sees the money, sees the food, sees it all. He goes up to his room, he opens the curtains up, he gets down on his knees and said, God, I thank you so much that there's nothing I've seen here that I want more than you. Have you said that? Have you looked around at the relationships? Have you looked around at the careers? Have you looked around at the education? Have you looked around at all of life, all the accomplishments that you could do and marshal for your name and said, Lord, there's not one of those I want more than you? Is he worth it? Is Jesus worth breaking the bottle of your life on? Is he worth it? You've got a life and you're going to give it to something. Is he worth it? He's the treasure. Jesus is the treasure in the field. He's the pearl of great price. So the guy finds a treasure in the field. He covers it up. He doesn't own the field. He covers it up and goes back and joyfully, not dutifully, not out of obligation, but joyfully sells all that he has so he can get that field. And everybody's looking at him like, why are you selling everything you have to get that field? We don't want that field. And he knows I'm doing it joyfully because I know there's a treasure here. People thought he was nuts. People will always think you were nuts for going all in on Jesus. But you know there's a treasure there, whether they see it or not. Paul writes in Philippians 3, "What is more, I consider everything a loss because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord, for whose sake I have lost all things. And none of it is a sacrifice." None of it is a sacrifice. It's all a bargain. You mean I get to give up something of lesser value, my life, to get something of greater, infinite value? You mean I get to give up something that doesn't satisfy to get the only one who does satisfy? You mean I get to give up my foolishness for his wisdom, my sinfulness for his righteousness? That's not a sacrifice. That is a bargain. That is a steal. Where do I sign up for that? What's keeping you from Jesus? What's keeping you from breaking the bottle of your life on him? What's keeping you from going all in on him? Is it sex? Because it's a big one out there. I don't care how old you are. There's so many different forms and manifestations that this drive for sex, our culture tells us that's nirvana. You gotta have that. That's the most important thing about you in this world and your happiness. And so we pursue this false promise. And we know what Jesus has called us to, but we wanna live with this guy or gal. We wanna do what we want with our bodies. And so we're not gonna go all in on Jesus because we know what that means, so we're gonna keep some of it back in our bottle, some of our life up over here. We're not pouring it all out. What about money? That's another big one, right? I got things I want, I got things I need, I got things my kids want, I got a future, I got a plan, building God's kingdom sounds great for some people, for rich people, for people who have extra money, but that's not me. So I'm not gonna go all in on Jesus, I'm gonna keep that part over here in my bottle, because if I go all in, I know that that means a radical generosity to God's kingdom that I wanna build my kingdom. So I'm gonna keep it over here. What about time? Being generous with our time, whether it's in the community, serving in ways where you're helping kids, mentoring kids, or doing something else, or it's here, serving inside the church. But I like my time. I like doing what I want with my time. I'm busy. Don't you know I'm a busy person? And other people can give their time doing good things, but me, I like my time. I like the idea of serving, but actually doing it's kind of inconvenient. So I'll keep my time back here in my bottle. See, what's underneath all those? Sex, money, time. What's underneath all those big things is just personal autonomy. I want control of my life. I'm not ready. I'm not willing to go all in on Jesus and surrender it to him. When we get to stuff like going all in on Jesus, selling out on him, people get nervous. You might be nervous. People you know are for sure going to be nervous. And they're going to say, well, you know, let's don't get so radical. That sounds, going all in, selling out to Jesus sounds a little radical. I don't know. Like, let's keep it all in perspective. How about a little balance? You know, good stuff, Jesus, but let's keep it in balance. A little moderation. That'll be, you know, don't get carried away. Binge watch a whole TV season of TV shows on Netflix. You know what we call that? Normal. Spend $4,000 on a trip to Europe or $30,000+ on a wedding. You know what we call that? Normal. Sign up for fantasy football and track your team like a Wall Street trader. You know what we call that? Normal. Train hours and hours and hours a week to keep up our appearance. Normal. Sign up young kids for traveling sports teams that keeps families busy and broke. Very normal. Devoting your life to following Jesus, selling out to Jesus, going all in on Jesus with your time, your money, your sexuality, everything, going all in on Jesus. You know what we call that? Extreme. Unhealthy. Weird. You might be a fundamentalist. Huh. Think we got that right? And so we stumble around from thing to thing, looking for the one thing that's gonna make sense out of our life. We go from crisis to crisis and that empty feeling inside, wondering, what is it? We play with Jesus. I mean, he's right there. We play with him. We have a little dab of him, maybe two dabs, maybe three dabs, but not much more than that. Jesus in moderation, Jesus in balance. But we're not gonna go all in. music team comes up. Buried beneath all that reservation, all that guilt, all that hesitation is a hunger, a passion in all of our lives to give ourselves to something fully. We want something. We want someone in our life who will break through the slumber of our culture, something that is worth giving our life to. So underneath all the chit-chat, underneath all the bills, underneath all the Facebook scrolling, underneath all the time we spend in church or amuse ourselves with hobbies or workplace drama we go through, underneath all of that, we're looking for the one thing that is worth our life. Because everything we've tried so far, just admit it, has not worked. Are you really going to choose money, sex, power, time over Jesus? Really? Do you take like your stupid pill this morning? You know? You don't give up something of greater value to get something of lesser value. It does not make sense. Take the bottle of your life, pour it out on Jesus. Right now, if you go to Mary of Bethany, she's been in heaven now for quite a while. Do you think she regrets going all in? Do you think if you could speak anyone in heaven who went all in on Jesus that broke the bottle of their life at his feet, do you think they go, well, I wish I hadn't done that. Wish I'd have held something back. No, Jesus never fails you. Jesus will never disappoint you. Jesus will never let you go. He always forgives. He always loves. He's always worth it. Let's stand and sing.